Now, we talk a lot about China on this program, no apologies for that, but significant shifts have also been happening in India, and perhaps we should be paying a bit more attention there. The Indian Prime Minister last week unilaterally revoked the statehood of Jammu and Kashmir, the only Muslim-majority state in India, and one that has enjoyed its own constitutional and substantial autonomy since modern India was created more than 70 years ago. Well, Kashmir has been the trigger for several wars between Pakistan and India, and in February, a suicide bomber, apparently acting in the name of a Pakistan-based Islamist terrorist group, killed more than 40 Indian paramilitary police. Narendra Modi, fresh from his re-election, says in stripping Kashmir of its statehood, he will end the terrorism and bring prosperity. Well, Kapil Komareddy is an Indian-born analyst and writer, most recently of the book Malevolent Republic, A Short History of the New India. And he joins us now from London. Kapil Komareddy, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, how do you think we should view what has been happening this past week in Kashmir?
What's happened in Kashmir is the revocation of the special status granted to Kashmir by an article of the Indian Constitution. And Modi has scrapped it overnight. So what has happened is tantamount to a constitutional coup. He has abolished the state of Jammu and Kashmir without actually consulting any of the stakeholders, any of the elected politicians. As of this moment, there are 800 prominent Kashmiris, politicians, businessmen, activists in prison. And there is a curfew. And there is a clampdown. People can't use telephones. People can't use the internet. People can't communicate with the world outside. There is virtually no communication. That is the state of Kashmir at the moment. And Modi calls this progress.
So what's, given all this clampdown on information getting out of Kashmir, what do we understand is actually happening on the street right now in Kashmir?
It depends who you believe. There are embedded journalists who go there and film scenes of peace and serenity and harmony. But there are reputable organizations such as the BBC who've gone and filmed protests and firing upon crowds. And there are people I've spoken to, journalists who've come back from Kashmir, who tell me that this is the worst the state has seen in decades.
So what is Modi's plan here? This is obviously a bold strike, as you say, an unconstitutional strike, a coup. But what's he actually trying to do?
What he's trying to do is really fulfill a long ideological yearning of his party to subdue the sole Muslim majority state in the Indian Union and strip away its autonomy, which he's really accomplished. And he wants to do that primarily because he wants to send a signal to the Kashmiris that their autonomy is gone. They are now full citizens of India, but at the same time, second-class citizens. And also to the rest of India that nobody is immune from his untrammeled authority.
Well, he's just won an election, re-election, just in May of this year. It was a landslide election. He's promising a strong and inclusive India. What is happening in India that this man, who you have written, is fueling bigotry with his, you know, Hindu nationalism? Plainly, he's striking a chord with the Indian people.
Yeah, that's the tragedy of India, that his strongman leadership has tremendous appeal with ordinary Indians at the moment. This is because he came to power by promising economic boom, and now that that's not working out, he's promising them a muscular nationalism. He's resorted to demagogy because he can't deliver economic results.
It's funny, there's a dreadful cliche in global affairs at the moment that almost everything is seen through the prism of Trump. But there seems to be something here about a vigorous appeal to a base combined with authoritarian language and action. Is that how you read it as well?
You put your finger on something very interesting. India was the first great democracy to fall to populism, and Modi predates Trump, and his playbook predates Trump's, and he's the first democratically elected illiberal authoritarian leader in this wave of populism we've witnessed everywhere, and he uses the language of redemption through force, through muscular expression of the self, And that clearly has such appeal with people that people are willing to be put through tremendous misery if they can feel good about themselves by making others suffer. If they can stand tall by cutting the feet of minorities. That's what we're witnessing in India. And it's sad and puzzling, but that is the reality of this great republic.
So what do you think is going to happen over Kashmir? Pakistan is obviously not an uninterested part of this equation. Every action has a reaction. What do you see the reaction as being likely to be for what Modi has done in the last few days in Kashmir?
Yeah, Pakistan's options are very limited. Pakistan, it's very important to remember, has played a very ruinous and destructive role in Kashmir. It has trained young Kashmiris to blow themselves up. And it has kept alive this cause of Muslim separatism. It was founded in the mutilation of India, and it's tried to keep this cause alive. Pakistan, it's very important to remember, is not interested in the emancipation of Kashmiri Muslims. Its principal interest is to use Kashmir to consolidate its own nationalism at home. The army uses the suffering of Indian Kashmiris to legitimate itself. But its options are very limited at the moment. It wants to internationalize this issue, but its traditional allies in China and the Middle East haven't actually stood with it. America, obviously, is all over the place under Trump. So we might see a spike in militancy, in terrorism, which could potentially culminate in a warlike situation between the two countries. So that is the risk we run at the moment.
So Narendra Modi has got up on television and he said that he wants to do two things fundamentally. One is to end the terrorism, as he puts it, within Kashmir. And no one can dispute that there have been, as you say, suicide bombings and the like. But also release Kashmir to its true potential, its economic potential, to bring growth and jobs and all the benefits of stability to that area. Is there any chance that he might succeed with that?
Well, it's very important to remember that investors are leaving India right now. The economy in India is decelerating, and India is largely peaceful. What makes Modi think that investors would be interested in pouring money into what could potentially become a war zone? So this is a lot of bluster, a lot of talk, and I think it's going to be very difficult for him to attract investment into a land where people resent outsiders. If Indians go and buy land there, if Indian business is going to go and buy land there, there's going to be a tremendous backlash. And I think the environment for a thriving business is not going to be easy to create in that land.
People talk about Trump, and certainly in the early days, there was a sense that Trump was some sort of weird anomaly and that he would not last long and then business would return somewhat to normal. I think that view is no longer held with the same level of faith. The Congress Party, which dominated India for so many decades, has emerged out of the last election enormously weakened. What do you think is what we're seeing in India? Is it a short-ish term period of Hindu nationalism and then things return a little bit more towards the secular state of old? Or are we seeing a fundamental long-lasting shift there?
I think we're witnessing a fundamental long-lasting shift. Congress ruled India for 55 years and it has given us Modi effectively. And there is today no opposition to this man across India. There is no pan-Indian opposition to Narendra Modi. Congress is effectively a busted flush. It has 52 seats in Parliament. Modi has more. Modi has 60 seats from one state. And there will be, I believe, an organic opposition to Modi at some point in the future. He himself has a reaction to Congress, and there will be a reaction to him. Whether or not that will be secular, inclusive, what shape it will take remains to be seen. But at the moment, there is no opposition to this man.
Well, we in Australia are very much fixated on China at the moment, and we're aware that there is a quad arrangement of countries around China. We're part of it. Japan is part of it. India is part of it, which is seen as being a counterbalance to the rise of China. When we look towards India, as some people have done, to say, look, India will be a counterbalance to China, how do you see that playing? And is that forefront of Modi's mind at the moment?
Well, there was a time when it was the Democratic Alliance against an authoritarian China had great value. But when you look at an India that is run by a Hindu supremacist, what is, does democracy itself have credibility if people vote for a man like Modi who persecutes minorities? And when you look at what China has done in Tibet and what India is doing to Kashmir, how does India appear to be an alternative model to China? People like Trump and people like Modi have discredited the democratic brand. And what you've mentioned, this idea of a democratic alliance, the Quad against China, had tremendous possibility. And now the rise of populism has diminished the appeal of democracy in many places. If democracy can deliver authoritarians, then what is the difference between China and India?
What a fascinating, if bleak, conversation. Kapil Komareddy, thank you so much for joining us today. Kapil Komareddy is an analyst and writer. Most recently, his book, Malevolent Republic, A Short History of the New India. Maybe a book we all have to read, I think. Thank you so much for that. You're listening to RN. This is Sunday Extra.